Claudio Radaelli, who is going to talk us about this. He's a professor of public policy at UCL University College in London, and from the 1st of September, he will start as a chair in transnational governance at the EUI in Florence, and is founding member of Science for Democracy. Thank you, Claudio, for being with us. Hoping you can speak again.
Thank you very much. We heard many times this afternoon the notion of citizens take over Europe as a movement, right? Movements are a little bit like surfers that have to choose the wave they want to ride. And here, obviously, it's possible to make mistakes and ride the wrong wave. That would be a wave where you expect institutions to offer something to citizens and kind of top-down solutions, whereby the discussion we listened to before was all about creating the movement so that then institutions have a role to play, but this role is played later. So in a sense, when we talk about the conference on the future of Europe and possible treaty changes that are not, by the way, directly linked to the activity of the conference on the future of Europe, we want them to, in a sense, codify and lock in what the movement has already created, which is exactly what Calypso was saying before, embracing and fight. And then after we create enough participation and self-governance, there is a moment where the institutions lock in the results of that with choices and changes. To get there, I just want to offer a set of categories to see how this may happen. And I want to see whether they resonate with you. When we think about the EU, we can talk legally, we can talk politically, and it immediately gets very complicated. Whereas I liked what Martin said before. I think it's the house, and we have to explain to someone how the house works. I'm just going to take a turn in the story narrated by Martin and say that the house has four ways in which it works. There is a bargaining, which is a quid pro quo, exchanges, deals, negotiation. There is a moment of hierarchy, what Martin was referring to, the rules, the community of law. You can see it in many different ways. There is a reflexivity moment where in the house people sit down and try to communicate seriously, not just to make a decision now, but to see what the best way forward is with some stable resolution to the conflict and not just a link to a particular set of incentives. And finally, what Virginia was saying before, there is a moment that is epistemic, which is the moment of evidence, science. We'll get to that in a moment. I think that citizens take over Europe has potential in all of the four dimensions on bargain, and that will be the big wave that the surfer could and possibly will ride. On bargaining, the influence of citizen can come at the end. There are people who theorize the possibility of a supranational vetoes through a pan-European referendum on the choices made by the European leaders. It can be an input through consultation and through the provision of evidence, through mobilization, so that what is bargained is not just what has already been decided, but can be shaped by citizens. It can also be bargaining on the basis of an agenda set by citizens. And in that case, it would be the European Citizens Initiative to say, we want this agenda to be part of bargaining. And finally, Calypso already said something on participatory budgeting. That's another dimension where we can demand participation in this kind of mega bargaining, which is the recovery fund. The second moment is the moment of reflexivity or communication beyond the exchange, beyond the quid pro quo. There we have what we heard in the previous panel about deliberative polling, citizen assemblies. And here, the new fact that we at least opened my eyes during the COVID-19 lockdown was that all the policies that we have seen do not work only on the basis of states versus markets, but actually they require citizens as the main actors of these. And citizens, we've seen it with the COVID-19 responses, are not just individuals that respond to short-term incentives. They're capable of reciprocity. They're capable of embracing the other by suffering themselves, by depriving themselves of their own freedom to go out, for example. So here, the big lesson as economists like Wendy Carlin were writing on this about the continuum that is no longer markets versus states, but is market, states, and citizens. So it's a three-dimensional a model that we should think of. The hierarchical moment of the House is when, I think for people interested, like us in participation, is in the moment where through an act of civil disobedience, we make visible the values of the European integration process. So when borders are closed, it's by crossing the border and being arrested, purposefully arrested, that you can show the value. Marco Cappato, who is with us, has done civil disobedience in the name of the European values of freedom and access to science on genetic plant editing. So this is the praxis also that Calypso was referring to, which is not a praxis carried out in private, but it is very public and to the point of civil disobedience leading to court cases and arrest. We need more of these examples of civil disobedience, which is not obeying the law, but disobeying the law in the name of European values. Finally, Virginia was referring to the moment of epistemic rules in the House is quite important because, in a sense, I want to say it's not a romantic fascination with science, but it's more by making bureaucrats and politicians accountable to evidence that we, in a sense, make them accountable to us. Politicians cannot prove in any possible way that a decision is representative of the preferences of the European voter or the European citizen. So we direct their attention towards evidence-based policy, towards science, in a way that makes it explicit that they are constrained by evidence. They are saddled with evidence-based requirements. And these obligations imposed on political activity of the EU are important for us to observe. And that's where we have to insist on transparencies, on of the science use, of the evidence use, of the economics use to make decisions. This is not to create the perfect algorithm for a technical decision, but rather, in a sense, to avoid decisions that fly in the face of the available evidence. So it's not that we don't want perfection, we want to avoid the most glaring mistakes of decisions that are obscure and unexplainable on the basis of the evidence. So I think talking about embracing, that's another important element of, because if we don't embrace science and evidence, someone else will embrace it, the lobbyists, the politicians, or perhaps will not be embraced by anyone, which is another possible disaster. That's a moment where we can combine value-balanced decisions with evidence-informed, not evidence-based, but evidence-informed decision. This big kind of finish in a moment, this big wave to surf, is not just about the EU. I think that by democratizing the EU, we can rekindle the democratic spirit and re-democratize the European democracies. The EU is a multi-level governance structure. There is no, we cannot expect to have a democratic EU and a non-democratic Poland or Hungary or for what they matter we can go down the list. So this idea of the quality of democratic decisions should be a continuum that goes from the local to the European level, trying not to separate one venue or theater, as Calypso said, to the other theaters. They are very connected, and you see it very clearly when it comes to implementing regulations and decisions of the EU that go down to the member states, to local authorities, to us, to our family budget, to our movements, to our freedoms. So in a sense, this is the last point I want to say, is to consider the EU arena and the national arena connected more in the answers to questions later. Thank you.
Thank you, Claudio.